जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, गोपी जना वल्लभ गिरिवर धारी, यशोदानंदन व्रज जन रंजन, यमुना तीरावन चारी, यमुना तीरावन चारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी, जायों विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर शतश्री श्रीमद डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्ति वेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय। अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की जय। ग्रंथराज श्रीमद भागवतम की जय। ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल डिवोटीज, ऑल ग्लोरीज टू श्री श्री गुरु एंड गौरंग। नारायणं नमस्कृत्य नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जयमुदीरयेत्। नष्टप्रायेषु भद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोके भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिकी। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। श्रीमद् भागवतम कैंटो 10 चैप्टर 1 टेक्स्ट 59। दृष्ट्वा समत्वं तच्छौरे सत्ये चैव व्यवस्थितिं कंसस्तुष्टमनाराजन् प्रहसन् इदमब्रवीत्। दृष्ट्वा समत्वं तच्छौरे सत्ये चैव व्यवस्थितिं कंसस्तुष्टमनाराजन् प्रहसन्निदमब्रवीत्। दृष्ट्वा समत्वं तच्छौरे सत्ये चैव व्यवस्थितिं कंसस्तुष्टमनाराजन् प्रहसन्निदमब्रवीत्। कंसस्तुष्टमनाराजन् கம்சஸ்துஷ்டமனாராஜன் பிரஹசன் இதமப்ரவீத் திருஷ்ட்வா சமத்வம் தச்சௌரே சத்யம் சைவ வ்யவஸ்திதிம் கம்சஸ்துஷ்டமனாராஜன் பிரஹசன் இதமப்ரவீத். மாதாஜி திருஷ்ட்வா சமத்வம் தச்சௌரே சத்யே சைவ வ்யவஸ்திதிம். கம்சஸ்துஷ்டமனாராஜன் பிரஹசன் இதமப்ரவீத் திருஷ்ட்வா, பை சீயிங், சமத்வம், பீங் எக்விபாய்ஸ்ட், அன்டிஸ்டர்ப்ட் இன் டிஸ்ட்ரெஸ் ஆர் ஹாப்பினஸ், தத் தட் ஷௌரே ஆஃப் வசுதேவ. வசுதேவ, வசுதேவ, நாட் வா, வசுதேவ. சத்யே, இன் ட்ரூத்ஃபுல்னஸ். ச, இன்டீட். ஏவ, சர்டன்லி. வ்யவஸ்திதிம், த ஃபர்ம் சிச்சுவேஷன். கம்ச, கம்ச. துஷ்டமனாஹ, பீங் வெரி சாட்டிஸ்ஃபைட் with Vasudeva's behavior in delivering the first child to keep his promise. Rajan, O Maharaj Parikshit, Prahasan, with a smiling face, Idam, this Abravit, said. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. I'm supposed to read till 61. So, my dear King Parikshit, when Kamsa saw that Vasudeva, being situated in truthfulness, was completely equipoised in giving him the child, he was very happy. Therefore, with a smiling face, he spoke as follows. The word samatvam is very significant in this verse. Samatvam refers to one who is always equipoised, unaffected by either happiness or distress. Vasudeva was also steadily equipoised that he did not seem in the least agitated when delivering his firstborn child into the hands of Kamsa to be killed. In Bhagavad Gita, chapter 2, text 56, it is said, Dukheshu anudvigna manaha sukheshu vigata sprahaha. In the material world, one should not be very eager to be happy, nor should one be very much disturbed by material distress. Lord Krishna advised Arjuna, Matra sparshastu kaunteya shitoshna sukadukkhadaha agamapayino nityas tamstiti kshasva bharata. O son of Kunti, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and their disappearance in due course are like the appearance and disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O son of Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. The self-realized soul is never disturbed by so-called distress or happiness, and is especially true of an exalted devotee like Vasudeva, who showed this by his practical example. Vasudeva was not at all disturbed when delivering his first child to Kamsa to be killed. Text 60. O Vasudeva, you may take back your child and go home. I have no fear of your first child. It is the eighth child of you and Devaki I am concerned with, because that is the child by whom I am destined to be killed. Text 61. Vasudeva agreed and took his child back home. But because Kamsa had no character and no self-control, Vasudeva knew that he could not rely on Kamsa's word. Om Ajnanatyam Randhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadavahyam Dadati Svapadantikam Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shravasadi Gora Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. There are many interesting things in this little episode or verse, so I'll try my best to highlight a couple of them. You're just visiting us for a couple of days? Okay. You know the storyline that's going on? Okay. So, since we know what the storyline is, so Vasudev brings his firstborn to Kamsa because he had previously promised. And when he offers the child to Kamsa and says, "Here, as I had promised, you were going to kill my child, so here's my first child." And as we read, Kamsa said, "It's not the first one. I'm worried about the eighth one. So you can take your child back home." And Shukadev Goswami narrates that Vasudev knew Kamsa cannot be trusted. So today he's this way. Tomorrow he can change his mind. So in these few verses, we are getting to see the contrast of character between Vasudev and Kamsa. And so the words are used in such a way to draw out that contrast. For example, when describing Vasudev, the words are used such as Satye Vyavastitam, situated in truthfulness. So he is a man of his words. He spoke that he will give his child to Kamsa to be killed, and he has done so. And he is doing it without being disturbed. So Satya is the first one. The second is Samatvam. He is not disturbed. And quite opposite of that is Kamsa, who is very easily disturbed. His mind can be very quickly agitated and he cannot be trusted. Because here it says Satye for Vasudev and Asati for Kamsa. Quite the opposite. And here it says Samatvam, and the word for Kamsa is Avijitatmanaha, one who is not conquered his mind. So here we see a debate or an exchange between two people who are severely polar opposites. Now in our lives, when we come across people who are so different from us and who are so seemingly unreasonable to us, how do you have a conversation? How do you have an exchange? So that's a question to be thinking about. And we take example from Vasudev's character because we want to be like Vasudev. We don't want to be like Kamsa. Now Vasudev does not take the path of, well, Kamsa cannot be trusted, so why should I keep up my word? Sometimes we find people or devotees say, well, that person's not going to fulfill their side of the deal anyway, why should I do it? Then the question is, well, then there is no difference between Vasudev and Kamsa. Everyone's a Kamsa then. But the reason the Bhagavatam extols the character of Vasudev and such devotees is, regardless of how the other person is, or regardless of whether or not the other person is going to reciprocate or even show any semblance of character, these persons are very firmly fixed in their own conviction. And that conviction is, I need to demonstrate the best character, because ultimately that is pleasing to Krishna, whether the other person does or not their side of the bargain is irrelevant to me. That's a very difficult situation. It's not easy for everyone to think so. But Vasudev shows that example. So that's one thing to consider. Another is, let's step back and look at Vasudev in general. So Vasudev has the service of being Krishna's parent, father. And in the life of any devotee who has a particular relationship or service with Krishna, one thing is for sure, that service will be very severely challenged. For example, even if one has a conjugal relationship with Krishna, that relationship will be very severely challenged by some calamity or difficulty, such as separation from Krishna. So the gopis of Vrindavan, or the residents of Vrindavan, were separated from Krishna for a very long time. And that separation was worse than death for them. But they tolerated that separation. So regardless of what that relationship is, if it is a relationship of friendship, right, there are five main relationships with Krishna: neutrality, servitude, friendship, paternal, and conjugal. Conjugal. See, these are my five main relationships and seven secondary. In these five, the greatness of each devotee is within these five, mostly the four, is that they can bear the most challenging circumstances in their service to Krishna, in their relationship to Krishna. So as a servant, Hanuman had the greatest challenge to find Sita Devi, to cross the oceans and to serve Lord Ram. And finally, when Lord Ram left for Ayodhya, everyone else went. Ayodhya, the transcendental abode, Ayodhya, back after winding up the pastimes, everyone went back with Lord Ramachandra except for one, the best of his servants, Hanuman. He was asked to stay back. So he's still there in Kim Purusha Loka in separation from Lord Ramachandra. It's a very, very difficult situation. Separation is very tough. Whether it is friendship, Bharata experienced separation from Lord Ram to a very severe degree. When Krishna left Vrindavan, all of his friends felt so separated from Krishna. It was very, very difficult, but they bore it. In paternal, we see Dasarath Maharaj being separated from Lord Ramachandra. And very soon, Vasudev, imagine being the parent of Krishna himself, God, and the very night that Krishna is born, Vasudev has to separate himself from the child. It's not easy. Especially newborn children have this ability, or within us, within nature is such that the attraction is very immediate. And the bonding of parent and child is very strong. Over time, you know, that has its own challenges. But when they're born, the bond in general is very, very strong. And a parent of that, and what to speak of if the child is Krishna? But to separate oneself from Krishna is not easy. But Vasudev has that service, very difficult service. And same in conjugal. So these are not ordinary persons who are chosen to play such a role, but they demonstrate something for us. So here Vasudev, not only was he separated from Krishna, the eighth child, but pretty much all the children who were born before that too. Because the story continues that Vasudeva has a change of mind, Kamsa has a change of mind, and then he, in front of Vasudeva and Devaki, starts killing all these children because he is afraid. And Kamsa is such a scaredy cat that he cannot discern what he's doing. It's the eighth child that is supposedly destined to kill him, but he kills all the first six children. None of those children is any threat to him. But he keeps killing them. And then when the child is born, the eighth one, Krishna, before he could kill, Vasudev takes him out of the jail. So the question is, what makes Vasudev do what he did? So here is shown, is Satya. Satya means he's situated in truthfulness. Now, to be situated in truthfulness comes with collateral damage. Because to be truthful means one will lose something. If you see, the nature of this world is that if you have to gain something, then if you stand on the side of truthfulness, you don't stand to gain it. That's why there is so much corruption in the world. That people with great character somehow don't seem to get the short end of the bargain. So you have to find ways and means that are not necessarily truthful to find what you need. For example, you have to get a job, so you have to have a resume. And on the resume, we all know what's on the resume is not truthful. There is always, always a fudge factor. People write exaggerated truths. If they have 1 year experience, they will write it as two or three. If they don't have very good skill, but they know something, they will say expert at or proficient at. They will add stuff. They will make it up, they will embellish it, meaning they stretch the truth. This is a common thing. Because if you write, I can't do this, I don't know how to do that, but I'm only good at this one thing, people are going to look at it and say, sorry, can't give you this job. So that's, for example, one thing. Another is, you're in a situation, not you, but someone is in a situation and they're challenged. Did you do this? And at that point, a person says, oh, I don't want to face the consequences. I don't want to face punishment. So let me escape it by saying, oh, I did not do it. Or I did not know. Or something. It's a white lie. So to be situated in truthfulness takes great character. Of course, these small things are nothing, but look at the situation here. Vasudev is this extreme of truthfulness. And he does it without being disturbed. That's the added greatness. Many people can be truthful, but they're disturbed about it. I have to bite my tongue and somehow, grit my teeth and stay truthful. But in this case, he's very equipoised. And he brings his child to Kamsa. So Prabhupada spends the purport, all of his time on the purport, in explaining the word samatvam. Samatvam means equipoised, not disturbed in favorable condition or unfavorable condition or circumstances. So the reference is Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text 56. Dukheshu anudvigna manaha, sukheshu vigataspraha, vita raga bhayakrodha stitadir muniruchyate. So we're going to just take the first two lines, because Prabhupada only focuses on the first two lines. Generally, when we hear that one should not be disturbed in distress or agitated in happiness, in general, the picture that we have in mind is a very stoic person. If you give them some very good news, give them some very bad news, that's not what is being spoken by Krishna. But when you read it, that's how it feels. That basically, Prabhupada would say, then a supposed yogi, if you read it, is as good as a stone. Anything wonderful? I should not be too disturbed in happiness. Anything distressful, someone in great pain or someone's died in the family, cannot be disturbed. So on this side, you seem like a complete fool, and on this side you seem heartless. Someone comes and tells you such and such distress, or in our own family or life there is some major calamity or distress, and you're like, that's okay, that's how the world is. It's very heartless. And if someone shares something very nice, what is there? Then you seem like, what's, I can't relate to you, you're not a warm human being. So when we read Bhagavad Gita, very often we fall into the trap thinking that that's how we should be. But that's not what Krishna is speaking about. One is supposed to feel happy. One is supposed to feel unhappy. Because circumstances bring us these emotions. However, the nature of how to deal with them is being spoken here. First of all, it says, Dukheshu anudvigna mana. The word anudvigna comes from the word gna. Anudvigna. And gna, even in Latin, means knowledge or to know. Okay? Anudvigna. Gna means to have knowledge. Particularly it means wisdom. There are a lot of persons who have knowledge, but they may not have wisdom. So I'll tell you a joke. Once a man had a very fancy car, and the car was having some trouble. So he took the car to the mechanic and said, some problem here. So the mechanic opened the hood of the car, put his hand, touched something, and in about 30 seconds, the problem was solved. The car was running smoothly without any problem. So he asked the mechanic, how much do I pay you? He said, $100. I said, $100? It didn't even take you a minute to do what you did. Why are you charging me $100? I think it should be, even I know that it's an engine problem. I could have solved it. I could have done it in $1. So the person, mechanic, said, yeah, that's true. It takes $1 to know that there is a problem, and the $99 is to know where to fix it. So one may have knowledge, but wisdom is rare. That's why people who are wise and people who have information are not the same. They're very different people. Wise people are rare. One may have a lot of knowledge, but not be wise. So gna means to have wisdom. So generally in any condition, we're all exercising and showing or demonstrating some wisdom. You know, oh, this is not a good situation for me. That's a good situation. What do I do to minimize the unfavorable and maximize the favorable? We make all these calculations every minute of our life. We all do. Because there is something called intelligence that's working. So udvigna means something that arises from such wisdom. What arises from wisdom is discretion and proper choice making. And anudvigna means to lose that. So dukkheshu anudvigna means one experiences distress to such a degree that their ability to exercise wisdom goes away. That is what Krishna is talking about. He's not saying don't feel unhappy, don't feel happy. He's saying your ability to still continue to be wise should not be given up. So when someone is in severe distress, they speak and do very, very foolish things, if you will. Someone's experiencing great distress, they say, I want to kill myself. Or worse, or however, I want to kill that person who's the cause of my distress. So the wisdom that, oh boy, if I act on that thought, the whole set of consequences after that are very severe. Okay, it's a moment conflagration, something, but I experience great distress, and if I think I got to kill that person, I lose the wisdom that after that I'm spending the rest of my life behind bars. I don't want to, whatever, I'm giving you a dramatic example, but people lose. If there's a family member that's lost, of course the pain is very, very severe, but the kind of emotions that they go through, such extremes that they forget other things, that the ability to exercise some wisdom of what am I supposed to do in this situation goes away. This is dukkheshu anudvigna. And on the other side, Krishna says sukheshu vigata spruha. The word spruha means to aspire for, to long for, to go after. So when someone is happy, they go after increasing their happiness to such a degree that they long for more and more of that happiness. So when someone's having a very great time, their greed for increasing that happiness is such that they lose their own wisdom of what's right or what's wrong. You've seen when people have fun, they start pushing the envelope or the boundaries of where they're supposed to hold themselves back. They keep on going. And that keeping on going is gata spruha, means to pursue. that longing without knowing the boundaries. So Krishna is saying vigata spruha means to lose that ability to know, hey, here's the line, I can't cross the line. For example, young men or women who get a thrill from driving because they don't get the car so often. They got the car, they have the thrill. I did this when I was young. You hit the gas pedal and the vehicle revs. Vroom. And it gives some level of adrenaline. It's like, ah, that's nice. And then you hit the gas pedal even more. And suddenly the car starts racing, or motorcycle, whatever it was. And you have a sense of some gush of exhilaration. And you want it, so you hit the gas pedal even more. At that time, our ability to discern that I might hit someone, if I get hit, I'm done, well, goes away, right? And everyone's like, yeah! So you go after even more of that exhilaration. That's what Krishna is speaking about. Sukheshu vigata spraha. One loses the ability to say, oh, I need to draw a line here. So that's what is being spoken about. That feeling happy or feeling distress is not the issue. There are boundaries to it. And one should know where that boundary is. And if one doesn't know, one doesn't have proper spiritual centeredness. That our spiritual centeredness is that our focus is on our service to Krishna. That keeps us centered. Hey, this is service to Krishna. I have to consider what is pleasing to Krishna. That centers me. But if I don't have that, some people don't have that any ideology that centers them. Ideally, it should be service to Krishna. That's the main ideology. Then there are no boundaries. And when there are no boundaries, a person becomes unsafe. Correct? Why do countries have borders? Because there is a sense of safety. Why do we have doors and locks? It's a sense of safety. We call personal space, it's a sense of safety, it's protection. For children, we draw boundaries for them and around them. We don't let anyone and everyone go and touch and handle our children because there needs to be a boundary. We don't let our children run on the streets because there's a boundary for safety. So we are trying to safeguard our consciousness. So it needs boundaries. It doesn't mean we cannot feel any emotions of happiness and distress. When we see Krishna dressed so beautifully, we are bound to feel happy. We cannot say, cannot feel happy. It's not like that. Of course, when it comes directly in relation to Krishna, there's no boundaries for happiness from a material perspective. I got a job, I lost my job. I got some money, I lost some money. Someone said nice things to me, someone said bad things to me. This is constantly the nature of the world. But to what degree we'll move is something we need to know. Now for each person, you know, the boundaries may be farther or closer, but still, point Krishna is making is that in distress or in happiness, one should have a very clear centeredness. And the centeredness is, I need to be fixed on my service, my relationship with Krishna. That's what brings them back to what they're supposed to do. Here, Vasudev is, I'm sure, he's not like he's happy. Haha, Kamsa, take my firstborn, kill him, no problem. I can produce more. It's not like that. The pain is very, very intense. But yet, because he's truthful and that's the promise he made, he has convinced his mind that ultimately there is a higher order wisdom of Krishna working here that I may not know. I may never know. However, I need to stay truthful to my character and my service to the Supreme Lord. Whatever is the consequence, that's the consequence. And that's Vasudev, and severely contrasted is Kamsa, who has absolutely no such conception, no centeredness of any kind. He only is thinking, I need to kill Vasudev's children, or at least the eighth one for sure right now, and then it will be all of them. So Bhagavatam is a very practical in its demonstration of the two polar opposites of characters, and it's encouraging us to choose like Vasudev's, choose Vasudev's character, not Kamsa's. Okay. Any questions, comments, thoughts? Keshava, Kishora.
Thank you. Thanks for the class, Nityananda Prabhu. For me, seems like there's a predisposition.
There's a?
A predisposition or in people that overact in happiness and in distress. There's kind of like a cultural factor, and seems like to control this is something that needs to be learned. It's not that in that cultural factor.
Give me an example of what's the cultural factor.
Latinos are more, react more quicker to the stimuli than the phlegmatic Germans or Nordic, if you like, for instance. Latinos, okay, in general, I mean, Spaniards, French, Italians, people from the Mediterranean, people from South America, react differently to the external factors than Nordic or...
It doesn't matter. What is being spoken about is that Sukheshu Spruha means pursuing that to such a degree that somewhere one crosses the line of the ability to discern that the consequences of that are not favorable. That's what's being talked about. It doesn't matter if this culture is very quickly expressive and someone else is a little bit more like that. It is irrelevant. There's that little wiggle room for whoever. The point's not being made about cultural difference. The point's not being made that don't be happy, don't be sad. That's not being spoken about. It's saying don't pursue that emotion to such a degree where your ability to discern what the consequence of that behavior will be lost. Don't get there. That's what's being spoken. If you take the life of any devotee of Krishna, in their lives there are happy situations and there are not so happy situations. They don't behave like stones, but it's not like that. They laugh when there is something funny. They cry when there is something sad. But it doesn't go to a place where their wisdom is lost. The wisdom that the world that we live in is a place of suffering. The world that we live in has these dualities, and somehow or the other I need to center myself on, if I'm a devotee of Krishna, what's the best way to look at this? This is wisdom. In Bhagavatam, when we did a seminar, the phrase we gave everyone to remember was LTV, Loka Tattva Vichakshana. That if you know the workings of the world, then you don't have wrong expectations from the world. You should know how the world operates. So the Bhagavad Gita tells us, Krishna says, this is how the world was created, this is how it operates. So I cannot have unrealistic expectations from the world, meaning all the people in the world and the world itself. For example, I live in Chicago. I cannot have unrealistic expectations that by March it should be warm and sunny. It can snow in April. I can't get disturbed about it. I may whine about it, but if I know that this is how it's going to be, this is how it's going to be. If I don't like it, I move to another place. I was thinking Phoenix, Arizona. It's 102 degrees already there right now. Then I'll complain that it's too hot there. This is the world. The point is, don't lose the wisdom or such that the next thing you will do will be detrimental for you. That's what's being spoken about.
Just following on that, many of us, we don't have the quality or sort of situated in that samatvam quality. Rather, you know, the tendency is to go this way or go that way. And as devotees, we always try to strive for that samatvam quality, and we cultivate in it. But at times, you know, you can feel push this way or that way. When you find yourself crossing the line, you know, that you start to lose your wisdom and your capacity to discern, and you start to get the perplexity, you know, feel perplexed, what step can you do to actually hit or start to move towards the samatvam space?
There is a verse by Prahlad Maharaj, Matirna Krishne Paratasvatova Mito Bhipadyeta Grahabratanam Adanta Govir Vashitam Tamishram Puna Puna Charvita Charvananam. That remembrance of Krishna does not come on one's own or by the help of another or by putting together a conference. So what it means is, for a sadhaka practitioner, our true learning, the great lessons we learn, are always in hindsight. In hindsight, after the situation has happened, we always learn after the fact. We don't learn in the moment, because that's not what a sadhaka does. Sadhaka always learns afterwards. Oh, I should have done that better. I could have done that better. Like that. So we analyze. Every sadhaka must analyze, look back and say, how can I do that better or differently? So as we are crossing the line, fortunately or unfortunately, fortunately in the sense that there are some interesting lessons to be learned, and unfortunate that we're crossing the line, then we need the help of someone else to tap us on the shoulder. Very, very important. So we should have in our lives such person or persons who will help us. That's one. Second, after practicing for some time, we know there is the prompt that tells us, I think this is too much. And if it doesn't come, then we learn it from the consequences. But it is not always so easy to catch at that moment. That's part of the losing of samatvam. We can't know. This is similar to Ravindra Swarup Prabhu. Once he was sitting here, he was speaking about attentive chanting. And he asked us in the audience, at what point in your chanting do you realize that you've been inattentive? And the answer is, the moment you're attentive, you realize you've been inattentive. Because if you are inattentive, we don't understand that we're inattentive. We keep on going. Only when you say, I have to chant attentively, you think, oh, I've been inattentive all this while. Right? So like that. At what point do we know that we've crossed the line? The moment we have samatvam. So when we study Bhagavad Gita, then we consider, you know, in that situation, I had totally lost it. Or etc., etc. Whatever is the analysis we go through. So it's always learned after the fact. But the goal is that as we study scripture and we discuss the lives of great personalities every day, the tendency to veer off the road becomes less. You know, attentive drivers versus inattentive drivers. Does that address your question? Yeah, Prabhu. Jai Baldev Prabhu. Jitendra Prabhu, you have something? He's thinking. He's thinking to say yes or no. Yeah.
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. One of the most important points for me, my personal life, and I think for everyone's life, is like you said, wisdom and knowledge. And my favorite pastime regarding that is the Keshava Kashmiri pastime, where Saraswati gave him a benediction. No one can defeat you. So then he approached the Supreme Lord. He didn't know Chaitanya was the Supreme Lord, and he was defeated by him. And so he composed a poem or a speech of many words, but he was humble because he wasn't in tune with one word, humility or respect. And so there's a nice quote by Buddha. He says, even though a speech be 1,000 words, but made up of senseless words, one word of sense is better, which if a man hears it, he becomes quiet, peaceful, and humble. So I appreciate that. So my question is regarding the fact that if Keshava Kashmiri knew that Chaitanya was the Supreme Lord, he wouldn't act so disrespectfully, because we essentially hear that there's tender qualities and pretender qualities. Usually when a teacher is gone, you have pretender qualities, and when a teacher is here, it's tender qualities, but they're not really genuine qualities. And there's so many pastimes like that. Vamanadeva and Bali Maharaj. Vamanadeva disguised himself. Krishna disguised himself in Indra Leela. So if they knew they were the Supreme Lord, so what are some steps we could do, you know? Because in the end, we won't develop this, you know, taste for Krishna consciousness. We maintain these pretender qualities. So maybe you could elaborate on that.
I can give different answers, but I'll tell you something which was an interesting thing for me. Chanakya Pandit says, you can take gold from a filthy place, and you can even take good instruction from an untouchable. If the instruction is good, meaning if you see some message that will help you, then even if it is coming from a weird source, at that moment is okay. For example, you know, sometimes a prostitute will tell the devotee, oh, if you had this attraction for Krishna, I was like, oh. So recently, there is a writer called Malcolm Gladwell, and he wrote many books on business. And on a couple of occasions, I've heard his speech because our company had sponsored something. And all. So recently, I saw like a snippet where he is teaching about writing, how to write. So he takes the classical story of David and Goliath. And he says that most writers, when they speak of David and Goliath, will write about the greatness of David, that although he was small compared to Goliath, how he was smart and intelligent and blah, blah, blah. He said, but very few will write from the perspective of Goliath. And he says, when you're writing creatively, then this is one way to look at things from another angle. So he said, for example, when you talk of Goliath, it is not just that David was smart, but that Goliath had grown so big that he became blind. He could not see David. And so then that's where it ends. And I've been thinking about it. So what is this becoming so big that you become blind? So our false ego or our pride means wrong sense of identity. Correct? I am. Yeah, it was turned off for some reason. So becoming very big and becoming blind means our arrogance and pride, or whatever is that, becomes so big, pride especially, becomes so big that we become blind to reality. The reality is that we are very small, tiny in comparison to Krishna. But the blindness makes me challenge Krishna and Krishna's arrangement, if you will. That's Goliath's blindness. So Keshav Kashmiri, the lesson from Keshav Kashmiri's life is, became a scholar, very gifted by Saraswati Devi, and became so big, so blinded, that he went and challenged Lord Chaitanya, who's the master of Saraswati Devi. But he couldn't see. He couldn't see that this is the Supreme Lord. Went and challenged him. So it's the, I would call it the Goliath effect. We become so big, we become blind. Although we are small, but we think, oh, we're gloated. That is a problem. Or the issue. Right? Thank you. Anything else? All right, it's 8:30. Oh, you have something? I was told specifically to end by 8:30. So, 2 more minutes and I'm going to not go beyond 8:35. Yeah.
Okay. I think you said Vasudev was, when he took his baby to Kamsa, he was emotional, but his emotions had boundaries.
Right.
So, if he had went beyond those boundaries, then what would happen?
We make foolish choices. If he went through beyond his boundaries, is that the question, if Vasudev went or if we go outside our boundaries?
Vasudev had boundaries as far as his emotions. So I think that meant that he was supposed to go beyond those boundaries as far as his emotions. I think if he had went beyond those boundaries, then, you know, I'm trying to see what would have happened.
Okay, yeah. So let's take, this is totally hypothetical, we don't know what would have happened, but let's consider, he's dealing with Kamsa. He had promised that he would bring the child. He couldn't do it anymore because the baby looked too cute, something, he couldn't go, it was difficult for him, so he never went. It would have enraged Kamsa to such a degree that he would have killed Vasudev, he would have killed Devaki, and who knows, he would have killed everyone else. And this is what Kamsa did. When the eighth child, you'll see in the story, when the eighth child, that very night, Vasudev takes across the Yamuna and gives it to Yashoda and Nanda Maharaj, right? And Kamsa comes the next morning, and it's not a boy, it's a girl there. And he wonders, what happened? It's supposed to be a boy. How will a girl kill me? It doesn't matter. He takes the baby and it smashes to the floor, but the baby escapes. And it's Durga Devi. And she laughs and says, you rascal, you will die. That eighth child is safe. So Kamsa becomes maddened. And he says, oh, what am I supposed to do? And you know what he does? He tells, go and kill every child in Mathura. So now Vasudev hears that, oh, if I don't do this, what Kamsa can do is treacherous. Although this is very difficult for me, there are many consequences for my not keeping up my word or, you know, staying within this. Like, for example, who knows? He could have put himself in harm, his wife in harm, his other family member. Kamsa can do anything. Like that. The Goswamis, Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, were told, become servants of the Muslim kings, or we kill all the Vaishnavas. What would you like? Both are bad. It's like, you die or you die. Which one do you want? Make a choice. But we have to make a choice. So that wisdom operates, or supposed to operate in a way that you don't lose sight of it. Okay. You got to stop. Say 37. Subal Prabhupada. Prabhupada said, don't underestimate the demons. Thank you. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai.